Hello, everyone. I am Tristan Sean Gregson here with Kyle Eck. We are here for pretty much the first formalized new podcast.
Proper episode.
You could call it, proper.
It's episode two, but the first one was a lot of
impromptu.
I think testing.
What we've learned is that more people on the East Coast are interested in this than I thought. So we're trying to come to you a little bit earlier in the day, although it's not really what our plan was. The normal kind of recording time for us would be after Cube League, which is later in the evening.
9:30,
10 o'clock Pacific. So this is earlier for us. We're trying to accommodate some of that East Coast crowd that people can get in here and participate in the live portion of the show for those of you that want to. Again, we are recording this as a podcast. Eck is the technical master of this side, so he has put together...
I've been busy.
Yeah.
I've been a little busy.
I mean, it's pretty naked right now if you check out the blogspot, or if you check out the YouTube page, or if you check out the
iTunes.
These are all things that we're going to be cultivating slowly, turning into real great resources as we hope to grow this program and what you are seeing, hearing, and hopefully participating in now. So as the users start to slowly filter in, for people that are interested, we'll just kind of, again, go over some more of the technical side for, again, if you're listening to this after the fact as a podcast. That's really the goal. The goal is to be able to have something that you can take part in live. We can communicate with us via the chat. Having a call-in option would be something we'd like to have in the future. I've looked into software for those options, but Twitch is surprisingly awesome because it's free and you get to see us, which I'm sure matters a lot.
Yeah.
So we've got that going.
It's important that everyone gets to see us.
Right, yeah. You make sure we're clothed and that we're...
it's on the up and up.
Right, we're not recording this from prison. We're not recording this...
That would be fun.
Kind of. The sound would be way worse.
Yeah. It's hard to get much worse.
And all the raping.
Well, I mean...
There's that too, I guess.
I guess.
Yes, Norbert, thank you for coming in.
Oh, God. If I had a dollar for every time I had heard that, I would have, like...
For those of you listening after the fact...
I would never have to pay for lunch again in my life.
Eck is not a fan of shaving his whole face, which means that he currently has a resemblance to Chumley. From Pawn Stars.
I save so much more time this way.
Sure you do.
So much,
sure.
Your life, so much less shaving area.
Right. Yeah, so that's pertinent, but I'm glad we've covered that. Again, for the podcasting people at home, you can just have a little dancing Chumley on your screen or in your car, or maybe a bobblehead. I'm sure he has a bobblehead. That would really help represent what Eck is bringing to you.
Yeah.
So, trying to make this a little bit more official, trying to go from our test session we had last week into something we can be a little more formalized with. Again, with the interaction from what we hope will be an audience one day, we don't want to be too rigid in terms of what our coverage material will be. But we do have some general topics that we'll at least start with. We'll try to cover in a given week.
Hence the root maze.
Right, yes, hence the root maze. Root ourselves to topics.
I thought we were just going to start talking about hate.
Going in a maze. Not ready for that. We're going to do the ceremonial... What's the pick session? Because...
You want to do that first?
So here we are. I mean, we are cube drafters, and the idea is we're coming fresh off of a draft where we had a scenario, we had something come up that we're interested in breaking
into.
Well,
it's all fresh. We can talk about it.
Exactly. Now, since we're not on our regular scheduled time, but we are on a regular scheduled channel, it's a little skewed. But we will be, through the magic of technology and X incredible prowess, you can stop looking at us and you can look at the sample pack for today. That was a real pack scenario I had last week at Cube League. For those of you listening after the fact, we're looking at, in order, because this matters, Counterspell, Solemn Simulacrum. I'll slow down too, just in case you want to take notes. Starting from the top. Counterspell, Solemn Simulacrum, Bayou, Hero of Oxen Ridge, Polluted Delta, Parallax Wave, Forbid, Wolfear Avenger, Ancient Craving, Figure of Destiny. I should really be coming up with like joke terms for all these cards since we have to say them so kind of like straight.
I know. They need nicknames.
Jack, well, I mean, you think some of them do, but I'm not ready to devolve our conversation to that level. So Jackal Pup, Corpse Dance, Thran Dynamo with that ugly frame and artwork that we don't use. Croson Grip, and last but not least, Capsize. And one of the reasons this pack was so memorable, other than the fact that I was having difficulty making my own pick, was that I happened to have so many of the buyback cards in cube in it. I consider this the kind of the buyback pack.
Yeah. Almost all of them, other than like Blaster of the Paths.
Yeah. So, in a vacuum...
The buy pack, if you will.
Yeah. Now, the cube is powered, and it's larger. These are things to be aware of. Again, the link to the cube we use is at the bottom of the Twitch page. It also can be found on my Twitter or the Blogspot. It should be around, so if you're listening to this after the fact, you can reference it if that matters to you. But we've already got some from our handful of people already in the room, we have some strong opinions, which I like. Yes, taking a land here is a very safe choice, especially a fetch land. I mean, it's hard to stay more wide open in a cube draft than first picking a fetch land, because even though it's like a blue and black land, you could end up playing it in like a red and black, blue and white.
Yeah, like,
who knows what kind of deck.
You're almost always going to be playing any fetch land you take.
Yeah, and shuffle effects are key.
It's very likely, like, even if you were to take Bayou here because you have, like, say, a preference for green over blue, you know, or you want to rather take the green and try and hack it harder because there's so much blue in this pack. Like, you could even, like, there's nothing wrong with that, and even if you don't end up with green or black, you could splash off of it, you know, like, either the lands are, like, super, super safe.
I mean, the one thing I do like about this pack is I would be hard-pressed to say that one card is clearly wrong.
Jackalpup is clearly wrong.
Clearly wrong, just because that one's gonna table
and
so often.
Figure is in the pack.
So you could take Figure, getting back Pup. Pretty consistent.
At worst, you get back Pup.
Well, no, I mean, if you take Figure, you might end up getting a pack back with some blue cards that you,
I mean,
you know,
I
by
don't
that
like,
point in the draft, you might not really want to have access to.
I don't like taking Figure first out of this pack, but Jackalpup is always coming back.
Okay. You're going with Stone Always. I don't know if I would go with Stone Always, but it is... Of all the cards we're looking at, it is the most likely to table, I will give you that.
You would have to have three people on red drafting. If you take Figure, because Hero Boxer is just going to go before Jackalpup 2.
Most likely, yeah. They can fit in different strategies. Although, Hero Boxed Ridge is surprisingly narrow in regards to... It kind of only fits a very specific role, being kind of the top end of the red decks.
Yeah, like, you only need so many of, like, the 4-drop haste guys. You know, Keldon Champion, Hellrider, Hero, etc. But, like, Hero's one of the better ones, because of the blocking prevention clause and Battlecry being sweet. Like,
it's also worth pointing out, like, sure, a card like Crossing Grip isn't a clear first pick in anyone's mind here, but it's also, cards like that are very strong in my own cube. Again, like, I like to think of drafting my cube as an amalgamation of Urza Block, Mirrodin Block, kind of those blocks where having cards like Shatter in your main deck can be pretty key. And Crossing Grip is one that does so much more than it looks like on the surface. That split second action comes into play a lot more than you think and is a great answer to a lot of cards that you might actually just have to scoop to otherwise. Clearly not first picking it here either, but... So...
I mean, I'd be looking to wheel it.
All those things kind of said, my eyes were definitely caught by kind of the standouts of the colors, but also the fact that we have access to all these different buyback effects. And in my cube, sure, there are a lot of aggressive decks that aren't going to make buyback cards very strong because you won't have the time to buy them back. Although, again, you'd like to think that any of the spells with buyback are good on their own. At the same time, you get so much card advantage out of having one of these buyback cards in your deck. I like to joke oftentimes that a card like Capsize could be my win condition in a blue deck. People will just kind of rage quit to a Capsize with buyback situation. Additionally, with Forbid, it is very, very strong. It would be very weird here to take a counterspell over Forbid, I think, just because of that kind of reach you have with it. And it's hard to say, like, you know, pick one, pack one. Oh, I'm really going to need just double blue. I'm just going to need just double blue.
Yeah, I think if you're taking a blue card here, I think you take Capsize, because, like, Forbid's very good, but counterspells, especially in cube, are really interchangeable. Like, obviously, like, being able to buy back Forbid and, like, quote-unquote Forbid lock people is really strong, but there's very little in terms of other effects like Capsize, where it's... Like, it's bounce, but it's also, like you said, it's like a win condition, basically. Like, you can just grind out games with it that no other card will let you do. And I think, like, you know, if you're going to play blue, you know, you very likely want Capsize. And while you want Forbid, you can get 10 other different counterspells. Whereas, like, you can't get another kind of Capsize.
In theory. So, in my own... My own draft here, I kind of pulled those three buyback cards to the front and kind of thought, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a card that I can get a lot of value out of one way or another.
I mean, Corsair would be fun. Like, that's like the fun V pick.
interesting. Well, I think Cube is fun, so I actually think most of these cards are fun. Jagglypuff can be fun. It can certainly be fun. Parallax Wave is, like, a lot of fun. I mean, I can definitely see a world where I take Capsize, wheel the Parallax Wave, and then all hell breaks loose, because that's just a sick...
Because that's just disgusting.
A sick, sick combo. It takes literally a million mana.
Yeah.
But it is very good when it happens. So, I kind of narrowed it down to those buyback cards. Again, in a vacuum, you know, maybe it's not the best set of circumstances.
I don't even mind taking Solemn here. Like,
no, like I said, there's not like...
Solemn's gonna get played in, like, almost every deck. It's always gonna be good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the most aggressive card ever, but it's just such great value.
Solemn works really well with Parallax Wave, Capsize.
Yeah, all these things.
All these colors we want to play.
Yeah.
So, at the end of the day, or my 45 virtual seconds that I had to make a pick or so, I took the Corpse Dance, and that was because the blue was so deep that I was really trying to stay away from blue. I was more interested in drafting the black, just because, again, from a builder and cube tinker kind of spot, I wanted to see what I could do with it in the new kind of black era that we're crafting. So I'm not saying that's clearly the best pick, that's clearly the right pick, but that was the direction I wanted to go.
Do you want to wheel the Ancient Craving, then?
That's the nice thing, is that I don't really mind what I'm wheeling. I'm not looking at this pack like, oh, I'm taking the Corpse Dance with the plan to get back a black fetch land and Ancient Craving. Or to get back.
There's a lot of stuff that, like, you can get Craving back, you can get Bayou back, you can get Delta back, theoretically. Solemn can even come back. Dynamo maybe would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is one of those packs that's so ambiguous that there isn't a clear pick order. You can't take seven other cards out and be like, okay, well, I know these will be gone. And it wasn't about that. I think it was about, for me, it was about kind of taking that plan. But what made this pack stand out to me so much was the buyback cards, kind of the anatomy of it. In the end, it didn't really matter. I ended up drafting an aggro black deck that didn't really want to play Shallow Grave and didn't want to have five mana in play for Corpse Dance of Buyback. I ended up staying on the sideline and not playing it. But again, I'm happy with a lot of these cards here. If I had to do it all over again... You know, it almost depends on what kind of mood I'm in. If I'm in a Capsize, try to get Parallax Wave to wheel kind of mood, I would definitely take that. I could also see taking Figure Destiny, get that Jagglypuff back. I get to see just taking Dynamo and being happy with any of the buyback cards wheeling, because odds are you're going to get one of them, and it's probably going to be Corpse Dance or Capsize over Forbid. So now Dynamo kind of really enables both those other cards at the same time. Any of those things could happen.
I mean, I wouldn't plan on Capsize coming back.
I would.
I don't know.
I think Capsize is more likely to come back than Counterspell, Forbid, Ancient Craving, Solace of Lacrim, Figure of Destiny, Polluted Delta, Bayou.
I don't know.
Maybe even...
Capsize is so good.
It's only because I've beat you with it so many times.
Yeah, and I mean, I've also beaten a ton of people with it. Like, Capsize, if you have a deck that can utilize it, Capsize is just really hard to beat.
And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that we would ever try to exploit players, but more of the uneducated players don't really think about the fact that the way you get out from underneath it is making the target not there, so the spell is effectively countered. Because that's something that doesn't really come up in current day Magic ever. It's not like,
no. Oh,
you know, your spell doesn't have a legal target, it's on the stack, well, now it fizzles and it's countered. It's more like, this thing happened or this thing didn't happen. It's like, I put Doomblade on the stack,
yeah. And
you rescued your guy. Oh, well, my Doomblade doesn't have a target. Let's move on with our lives. It's not like, you know, this buyback thing
has
an effect.
Well, so we picked Corpse Dance. Corpse Dance, you're our winner.
I don't think it's a winner. I just think it was a good talking point. I like the pack. I like Corpse Dance as a thing a lot. I know in the Moto Cube, I'm really surprised at how often a card like Corpse Dance will table. And that's a cube format where that card really shines. Because
it's
card advantage built into itself and there's so many great tricks with it. I mean, anytime I have that card and Venser Crucibon in my deck...
It's just such kind of like a weird effect that's hard to control. You know, like, because it's the top creature card.
Right.
It's buyback. It's all these stuff that a lot of players aren't necessarily used to.
It has a lot of words on it that people just don't...
They don't see anymore.
Well, they don't think about. It's not that they don't see them. They just don't think about them. Like, exile it and end of turn, but what if it's in your graveyard already? That's why, like, the Triskelion thing works really well.
Yeah.
It's got to be the top card... Which, again, you know, you don't think about when you're just jamming stuff in your graveyard. Or you're thinking, you know, like, oh, I'm going to get back my Triskelion. Well, now, like, some combat happened and my, you know, Urnam Djinn died. Well, now it's like a cast Corpse Dance. I'll get back my Triskelion to shoot your guys and shoot my Triskelion. And it's like, well, that's not going to happen anymore because these other things happen. All things being said, Of course, Ants is what I went with, which leads mildly into one of my topics today, which isn't really exactly in order, but it's on here. It's about packages or plans
you the would package have. Package deals, as it were.
You would have in Cube. Where they shine, where they're too narrow and you try to want to eliminate them, and finding the great middle ground where you could be playing cards that are part of a package or not, and having your deck still do things, and you got to kind of play active magic.
Trying to avoid the first and 15th pick problem. Where cards are either windmills or nobody wants them. Which is a big problem with package cards.
Not necessarily nobody, but only one particular deck, only one particular player, one particular set of circumstances to come together to want something.
And that guy's not there, nobody wants it.
Yeah. Like some of the cards that I think in today's Cube they have that problem and are really struggling to stay in the Cube are cards like Crusade, Honor the Pure. I mean, I can definitely remember years back where it's like, oh, let's just jam all of those things
every in there. White token making effect and every enchantment all at the same time.
Yeah, you know, we would go as far as Divine Sacrament, Piano Nomad Captain, and cards of that caliber.
Which I think Glorious Anthem was in Cube for a long time.
Yeah. But I always liked Divine Sacrament just a little bit more because there's that.
Yeah.
That super go big option.
Right. But
you get the idea. So cards like that, you know, are they a package? Are they plus on a package? I do have some other examples we can now pull up on that. But cards like Honor and Crusade, they feel really awkward where it's like, you see it in a pack and you're like, well, is this a very narrow plan? Am I going in on this? Do I need to take it now?
Yeah. The nice thing about Crusade and Honor of the Pure is that say you have a pack with, like, just, like, for example, Crusade and Spectral Possession, or something similar, like, two cards for it, you can take, like, the Spectral Possession.
You know which one to take first.
Yeah, you can always get back Honor the Pure Crusade, like, they always table. It's very rare that they two people are on, like, the white weenie token deck plan.
Which is awkward. It's always one of those things where it's like, well, should this card really exist if it only services one player in one set of circumstances? Or is it enough of a role player that you're going to find ways to play it when it could be appropriate? Could me having... Spectral Possession doesn't really work as a good example. Marshall Coup with Crusade. Like, I control decks, blue-eye control decks, with, like, let's say you have Marshall Coup and Decree of Justice as kind of your win conditions. Those still aren't really decks where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to play Honor of the Pure.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
What's also awkward, too, is like especially Crusade, is that because it affects both players... Like, I've been killed by my own Crusade.
Sure, whatever.
Like, it's just kind of like one of these, like, oh man, I have this sweet linear deck that I put together, and I've got all the effects for it, and they're backfiring on me.
I got you a few weeks ago, actually.
Yeah,
because you were playing White Weenie, and then I, like...
You decreed justice.
And then I made, like, a bunch of five... I made 4, 5, 5 angels.
Right.
Ah, so I would have lived... The numbers were key there.
Right, I would have lived, but instead I was dead.
The end of many of great magic stories.
Right, yeah.
I would have lived, but then I was
But then dead. I died, yeah.
But again, you know, how much did that really matter? How much did that play into it? The fact that my angels were 5-5, sure, led to me to a spot where I could cast that and do that specific thing. But I don't think that's regular.
No, and I think the Crusade effects are good enough. Like, you really want them in the aggressive white decks. Not necessarily... You don't have to have, like, Conqueror's Pledge, Increasing Devotion. Like, you can just play it with, like, the Savannah Lions, Elite Vanguard, yeah. Sarah Avenger.
And those are really the reasons why those cards are kind of holding on at this point. I think the Crusade package is probably the weakest package we're going to discuss on this show today. But it's important to point out, you know, the things that it does do and the positive sides of it. I mean, personally, for me, what I think about when I think about those cards are, you know, they're kind of like, not necessarily Umbras. They're kind of like equipment. They're kind of like, you know, sure, like maybe there's a set of circumstances where I'm going to go Savannah Lions, Crusade, and then eventually Sun Type.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, I had a Leonin Scimitar in one way or another. Yeah. That might have been good. I mean, there's some circumstances where, you know, maybe it's not, but there are other circumstances where that could have a lot of impact on a game. Now my Titan's bigger than your Titan, or...
Just letting you trade up.
Can't remember which Titan that's actually useful for. Blue tap down white, black still kill white, red...
Primeval Titan?
Inferno. We don't play Primeval Titan.
Doesn't come up much.
Either way, that's kind of why they're still there. And again, over the years we've had various forms, but they've just kind of narrowed down that package. So in the hopes where yeah, you can draft White Weenie. You're probably going to be able to get that Crusade very, very, very late. But you could probably also evaluate it in a way where you can make something of it, index it outside of that. I'm going to play Savannah Lions. I'm going to play 8.5 Tails, although I don't think he's in there anymore.
No.
I'm going to play Striker Possession into Hero Blade Hold into Cloud Guard Ranger. GG. Right. There are other things you can do.
There are so many cards in white already that, like, even if, like, you were to theoretically cut Crusade and Honorary the Pure, are still going to be there. It's not going to be like, okay, we cut the Crusade effects, now all the token-making stuff is out. All the weenies are out.
That wouldn't happen. Army of Can stuff is still really good.
What I'm saying is that the Crusades take up such a small amount of space. There's the...
Yeah, I mean, again...
You're not playing a bunch of cards to support them.
The fact that there are 700 cards... They're supporting a bunch of cards. The fact that there are only a few cards helps that one out a lot. So yeah, I mean, in a way, I feel like it is a package, but in a way, it's a small package, and it doesn't really have that much of an impact. Cards that kind of revolve around larger packages, as that seems to be the word of the day today, or more important cards for them, are cards like the Wildfire Elements, or the package for Wildfire. And with taking the Signets out of Cube, which was a conscious decision that I'm still very happy with, there have been rumblings of, well, you know, add these three or these four and do those kind of things. I could see that happening in some way or some variety down the road, but it's kind of a middle ground. We've kind of added that one extra mana rock that's a bit of a nod to the big red decks. Something like we just recently added Fire Diamond, and now it definitely catches people off guard when they see Fire Diamond. They're always like, where are the other diamonds?
Right.
Well, like, they're at home. We only got the Fire Diamond.
It's not immediately obvious, like, why is it Fire Diamond? Why is it not something... Because, like, you know, cards like Sphere of the Suns are not in. And that would be, you know, like, if you're kind of just thinking about it, like, if you were to, like, add a 2-mana artifact, like, mana-producing artifact that is not necessarily bound to a color... Or, like, if you were to just pick one, most people will not go to one card out of the cycle. They're going to go to something standalone. You know, Sphere of the Suns or, you know, anything.
Sphere is fringe playability. I think that the fact that it's a 2-mana rock, I'd like to know that I'm going to get more than 3 uses out of it. And again, you're like, you know, we kind of, we're not pigeonholing it, but we're kind of angling it the direction we want to be able to use it for. That way you can cast Solemn on turn 3, you can cast Wildfire on turn 4, and you can eventually recast some form of dragon card somewhere down the road.
Right. I mean, Fire Diamond is very specifically there to make the Wildfire deck better.
Like, but it's also a fine card.
Yeah.
Decks with balance, decks with upheaval.
I mean, any deck that wants spells, the acceleration is going to
They're still going
to
take this card of the Tassler colorless, just like they would a Mind Seller or the other things.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
It just happens to also make the Wildfire deck better because it produces red. It just helps a small amount more there than it would at other places.
Fraction of a percentage point.
It helps.
But that's why it's there. You know, one of these days, who knows, they might add 3 only partial red signets back into the queue to kind of take that one a little bit further. But it's not a must.
On a related note, Norbert wants to know, how have the key runes been?
Oh, they've been fine. The 3 power ones have been the most effective in play. Although Simic is surprisingly good too.
Rakdos is awesome.
Well, that's a 3 power one.
Yeah, and like, and First Strike.
Yeah,
like that one is sweet.
I think Rakdos is kind of the that is the the keystone. That is the trend setting key rune. It's 3 power. It attacks. It blocks and survives. It's, you know, your opponent isn't necessarily sitting on the spot removal for it when it comes up. Well, they could be. The Gruul run was really good last week. I mean, it attacked for lethal, I saw. It also got natural ordered into a Terastodon at one point.
That's saucy.
Yeah, I mean, it took some mana, but it was fine. The Simic one's really sweet because it can turn on Self-Shroud. I haven't had a... Like, we play 8 out of 10, so we kind of took out the ones that were the least whelming.
I think we only play 7. And then we cut...
Oh, I guess we cut Gruul, too.
Golgari.
Sorry, that's what I meant. We cut Golgari. Initially, I put in all 5 from Ravnica, thinking that it would be a fine full cycle, and then Gatecrash was such a letdown, with especially the Boros one.
Oh.
But the Orzhov one was also kind of meh, so that we kind of like scaled it back, and we now play 7. And it's not a color-dependent thing, it's more of a what-those-cards do kind of thing, which don't really play into something like the Wildfire package. They kind of get just weighed on their own merits. Because again, I think they're really... the big difference between 2 and 3 on the mana cost of those cards is really what I like about them. They play better. The fact they cost 3, the aggressive decks still get to do what they want to do, and the control decks aren't, like, just kind of ramping back up. It all kind of just evens out.
Yeah. I really like that. And I mean, like, the blue-white one, like, the Dimmer and Azorius ones, because they have evasion, are both excellent.
No, they're great in control decks. That's just,
like,
where you want to be.
Like, super good.
Like, in the past handful of months we've been playing with Return to Ravnica, the Azorius one has been a surprisingly good win condition for the blue-white control decks. Yeah, I mean, getting 6 points of damage over that card is really great. When you have cards like a Celestial Colonnade or maybe a Restoration Angel doing some of the chunks of damage, but you want to have that last card to get over the top with.
Get it back with Sun Titan?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. These are things that happen. Coming back to the topic of the Wildfire, now we had to make adjustments on the creature side more recently to try to make sure that the Wildfire package was worth keeping, because as the cube got larger and as kind of just a lot of color shift happened over the years, creatures get better, spells get cheaper, those kind of things. You know, cards like Wildfire, Ember, and Zinyi, Destructive Force, and Friends weren't necessarily kind of like keeping pace with everything. And while a conscious decision was made recently to add Jackal Hops and Devastation while trying to boost with the artifact side with mana, again, the artifact section got boosted, we also want to make sure that the classics in the form of Wildfire were well supported. So that meant bringing in a couple of key... Actually, I think...
It was 5 Toughness or Bust.
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of had like a big gatherer search and kind of a small community talk about it. There were not the greatest...
Options were
right.
Options were limited.
I think the thing about adding cards for this kind of specific niche, is that maybe they're too pigeonholy, and that was part of the problem. Is we had to find cards that you could play in other decks. And I think one of the keys there was a card like Goblin Goon.
It works in the aggressive decks as a top end guy, but it also lives through Wildfire.
Right, and odds are when you Wildfire against the decks where Wildfire is effective, he'll be the biggest guy on the board, he'll be the only guy on the board, so he can do the things that he needs to do.
Yeah.
So having a greater than 4 toughness creature that costs less than 6 mana is pretty
right.
key.
Right, like curving into Wildfire when you have a guy that lives is just so important.
Yeah, I mean, we did add, I remember adding Hellkite Charger as a bit of a, I think that was the only one that was greater than 5 casting cost.
Yeah.
That kind of led to that plan. There was reasons behind that. I think I can stick behind those reasons that I don't really have in front of me right now. That being said, I think the loosest of the cards part of this was probably Tephroderm.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'll pull that one up because nobody knows what that one does.
It's a bit of a liability, but it gets the job done, which is pretty key. Again, you know, finding cards that you can curve into Wildfire is really the key. The problem is that Tephroderm comes at kind of the Lava Hound's price.
It's a non-bow.
Yeah.
Kind of shoot yourself in the face.
Yeah, but, you know, for what you're doing, it should be worth it most of the time.
Right? Like, you still have a dude.
It feels like we're just trying to defend a card at this point.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we need to.
I mean, the problem is, like, so we won't go into the whole search now, but when we were trying to figure this out, it was, like, literally red creatures, mana cost, like, 3, 4, or 5 with 5 toughness on Gatherer, go. And we literally looked at every single one of them, and they're all horrid. Like,
well, part of the problem is that none of them have 5 toughness or greater.
Right, well, that's, like, if you lock that in.
Not even, like a Goblin Mutant.
Goblin Machinist.
Covetous Dragon did get there.
Covetous Dragon got there.
Yeah, yeah, he is there.
There was, like, you know, Arcslogger. Like, is kind of, like, one that people think of, but it sucks and limited, because you get, like, one shot, maybe?
Maybe we should play it over Tephroderm, because that way we 60s. Don't take 4.
Like...
People have played 60-card decks in Cube to effect.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would put the word great in front of it, but I've seen people...
I mean, Thundermaw Hellkite is in...
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some obvious ones. I mean, it's not like we had to go to Thundermaw Hellkite and be like, aha, now we have a reason to play this card.
Right.
Those are good. Those are kind of good. But we're talking, you know, the topic here is packages and reasons that you may want to include cards and not making them too narrow. Tephroderm is one of those cards that, again, it's the edge.
Yeah.
It's the,
we're on the fence of playability.
When you open a 15-card pack with a Tephroderm in it, you're kind of looking at it like, what's going on here?
So speaking of cards in packages that are kind of narrow, there's another one.
Today's Captain Segway. So yeah, we've covered Wildfire. We've covered the White Crusade effects. Let's go on to a tournament favorite of over a decade ago. Wow, it feels awkward to say it. It's Academy Rector, mostly known back in the day for searching up Yawgmoth's Bargain. But in Cube, the best of the Hadoukens would be to go and get Form of the Dragon.
That is an achievement.
Yeah,
for those of you keeping score at home.
From the Cube achievement list. At the, I think Wildfire with Covetous Dragon is also a Cube achievement.
Right, that's the...
That's the Kai achievement.
Yeah, the Kai achievement.
Because there's no achievement for winning multiple Pro Tours with the Cube.
Since we that would be that. Really hard to do.
That being said, Academy Rector is such a fun one. Yes, you can search for Crusade effects and make your double white bears better. That is in no way a jab.
Stranger things have happened.
Academy Rector has done some interesting things since we put it back in the Cube. Years ago, Academy Rector was there. Academy Rector did not do anything. It was a 1/2 unblockable creature that no one cared about.
Right.
You would have to kill with your own effect, and then you'd have to hopefully still have the thing in your deck that you wanted to get that would hopefully do something good enough to win a game.
Yeah, like, it was a lot of effort for very little payoff. But I think now, like, Necro's in, Form of the Dragon's in.
Bargain is in.
Bargain's in.
It's good with Opposition.
Opposition's fine. Like, there are enough awesome, like, game-breaking enchantments that you can go get.
I mean, they can be awesome in game-breaking. Like, right. Opposition doesn't always do it by itself. You can go get the Squirrel Nest that goes with the Opposition. You can get the moat that keeps you in the game. You can get the abyss that starts killing things.
Like, you could even go get just control magic.
You could get control magic, yes.
That's not the worst.
That would not be the worst, yeah. These things can happen.
Like, you can do a lot worse than that.
So, again, talking about the Academy Rector package, because this is clearly one of those cards that is package-oriented. You still want to have those cards that do things. All the cards we've mentioned are going to do things without Academy Rector. You just want to make things better. Yes, Omniscience is way too deep. That card costs way too much mana.
Yeah,
because again, you want the cards in Cube to do things when you're not cheating them into play.
Right, they have to be real magic cards when you don't have the whole plan come together.
Yeah, I mean, Ulamog and Kozilek, I remember when I first put them in Cube, and everyone, what felt like everyone.
You never cast it.
No one's ever going to do this. If you don't have Tooth and Nail.
And then someone was
like, they're not artifacts, I can't tinker them.
Someone was like, Sol Ring, Basalt Monolith, Thrandyne and Mo, Ulamog. Like, and then it shut everybody up.
Play magic, cast this card, really have an impact. But yeah, yes, these are things that happen. So with Academy Rector, to go back, all the cards we mentioned should do things on their own. I think Bargain is probably the key card. Again, when you think of Rector, how much it costs, kind of the things that go around with it, maybe it's a little harder to make happen without a card like Rector. But again, to me, like, Academy Rector is so fun that I want it to be there. And again, for my Cube, that's really what it's about. When I've got 700 cards and I've got 90 white cards, 45 white creatures, I can find room for a 1/2 for 4 that's going to do cool stuff a lot of the time, and sometimes it's going to be god-awful.
Getting Form of the Dragon with the Academy Rector is very satisfying.
That is an achievement.
Yes.
A lot of these packages will kind of lead into achievements if you make the package happen the way that you want it to happen.
Yeah. You live the dream, as it were.
Stupid thing doesn't even die to Skullclamp. What the hell?
I know, right? Make that thing a 2/1.
What the hell? It's so stupid.
Give it, like, Eternal Witness stats. Something. Anything.
Okay, so we'll move on to one of the more anomalies in Cube. Some people call it a one-card combo. I don't know if you even really need a package for this card, but there are cards that go around it. That would be Tinker.
Ah, yes.
You want to make sure you have a Tinker package.
Oh, God, that's ugly.
Yeah, it's...
There we go. Much better. Whew. So, yeah. Tinker is hardly a package, because you're going to play a bunch of sweet artifacts anyway, and it's one card.
Yeah, but, again, you want to be conscious of cards you add to Cube based around it. We are discussing packages today, Kenny. And no picks submissions required. We will take care of submitting all the packages. No one needs to do anything.
Yes.
Just fine. Yes. So Tinker, again, maybe that's the reason you play Inkwell Leviathan and Blightsteel Colossus in your Cube. Maybe.
Like Sundering Titan?
I like Sundering Titan without it.
Well, we know why.
Oh, right.
It says destroy it, and then a number, and then lands on it.
I think the wording on it is very different and weird.
Yeah.
That said, you kind of have to be aware of Tinker, because you can't just jam it in every cube if you don't have enough artifacts for it. And you can't just jam it in a cube with a bunch of artifacts that aren't going to necessarily search for anything better.
I think it's definitely a card that should be in pretty much every power cube. Because, like, there are so many cheap artifacts that work really well with it.
Right. I think when you say Power Cube, you're implying, oh, did the cave fall down? You're implying you have, you know, moxes, and moxes are great things to tinker away.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say that, you know, to go with the tinker package, you're going to, we have a card, you know, like a memory jar, I don't think would be in the cube without tinker. Maybe, but it's so much easier with tinker. Yes, you know, Darksteel Colossus, Blightsteel Colossus, Inkwell Leviathan, those cards exist in the cube because Tinker does. Blightsteel Colossus is probably my favorite example because, you know, you don't... Ulamog and Kozilek are more fun than Blightsteel Colossus. Blightsteel Colossus, in most ways, isn't a fun Magic card.
It's kind of, like, creates this lame subgame.
It's not, like, if there was a game that existed after it happened.
Right. Well, it's like, do you have some toughness? How many more turns of magic do we get to play?
The thing about Blightsteel Colossus is it's fun in cube because tinkering for big monsters is fun.
Yeah.
Blightsteel Colossus, the entity, is not fun.
No.
When you pay 12 mana for it in a game of magic, you usually feel like, oh, this is taking forever. Or you've assembled the other kind of Voltron, which is much more rare.
Or the game has gone on so long at that point that both players are just willing to... like, let it end at some in some way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've played in control mirrors where someone has brought in Blightsteel Colossus because they think it's going to win the game, and then the one guy counters it after it being banned forever.
Is it, like, milling? So they have, like...
a milling plan? But Blightsteel Colossus isn't even, like, a good anti-get-milled plan.
Well, I mean, it goes back.
The one card.
It's better than nothing, right?
It's like a torturous way to die.
Yeah.
Be milled to Blightsteel Colossus, go. Draw Blightsteel Colossus.
Find a way to discard it.
Oh, God.
I know.
Yeah, sounds like a great game of magic. Your hand has to be on 7 forever and you never can play anything else. That sounds worse than getting Necrolocked with no library.
Oh, wait. You won that game.
That's a different story. So, yeah, Tinker, it's kind of a gloss over kind of thing. You get the idea. It's a smaller package.
A related package, however... to Tinker is the Trinket Mage package.
Nice, the Trinket Mage package. Now, this is a package that we definitely kind of fleshed out in the last handful of months. How deep to go with Trinket Mage is a big deal. And depending on your cube, you know, we talked last week about kind of those all-or-nothing kind of cards like Tolarian Academy or Mishra's Workshop. And I think that cards that run in a similar vein, not necessarily all-or-nothing, would be something like... the Sea of the Cyanide and Great Furnace, which are and Darksteel Citadel, which are fine cards if you've got Tolarian Academy in your cube. And I considered going that deep on, especially as we went deeper on the Trinket Mage and Friends cards.
Yeah,
because you know we've got Shrapnel Blast, which works great with Great Furnace, and so on and so forth. But I couldn't pull the trigger on that one. But being said, there's plenty of cards Trinket Mage.
I think one of the things that has been a great boost to Trinket Mage in cube. Is having more graveyard hate in the one mana slot. You know, Relic of Progenitus, Nihil Spellbomb. You know,
yeah, these were you know,
like those are relatively important in cube, especially once we added the Oversold Cemetery Oath of Ghouls package. Like, graveyard as a resource is still a big deal in cube, so you want enough cards to counteract that. Deck doesn't win every time,
but they also do something.
Right,
that's really what can be difficult about it. It's like, you know, you don't want to play Tormod's Crypt because, yeah, that one time you might get something against the reanimator opponent in the, you know... Talking about hate cards, talking about graveyards, those are topics for other weeks, and they do kind of come across with the Trinket Mage topic. But Trinket Mage has been an absolutely great card for allowing us to include more Nihil Spellbomb, Relic of Progenitus effects where, yeah, those cards replace themselves, they do things, they fight against what can be very powerful effects and decks you might have to deal with that are very fast. But at the same time, you don't feel like they're so pigeonholed and narrowed. I mean, those of you that have drafted the MTGO cube, when you see that Tormod's Crypt tabling, you're like, right. Oh, well, if it happens to show up 13th, I will put it in my sideboard. And if I happen to play against the reanimator opponent, and I happen to draw it in one of our sideboard games, it might happen to do something.
Like, at least the other... like, I feel like most, like, really narrow hate cards like that have to do something else to justify their existence. Like, at the very least, draw a card. Or something.
They all need to be Tisabo's Web.
Yeah, like...
if Pithing Evil was Tisabo's Web, or had draw a card on it, you would play it.
Yeah.
That card would be so good!
Oh my god! Or, like, you know, a card like Scavenging Ooze, for instance. Like, Scavenging Ooze does a great job at keeping their, like, Reanimator and Graveyard heavy decks in check, but it's also fine against The red decks.
If you mean fine against, life. You mean that it does something, then yes. It yeah. attacks, it blocks. Withered Wretch is another one of those difficult to analyze cards. I love it in Living Death decks.
Oh, well, yeah. Withered Wretch. Making it one-sided is super good.
It had gotten to the point, before we kind of expanded the cube, and we were doing a lot of cubing, it felt like if someone cast Withered Wretch, you were like, all right, I need to prepare for Living Death, whether or not it was out there or not. You're yeah. like, why would you be playing this Grizzly Bear unless this was going to happen?
Withered Wretch also being a zombie is kind of relevant.
Yeah, it tries to be relevant.
Great problem.
Again, if I was into editing my cube, I would definitely go for, like, the all-encompassing undead theme. I would take vampires and zombies, and I would call them all undead, and anything that helped one would help the other, and then I would bring Vampire Nocturnus back, and I'd have this great mixer, and everyone would get along, and people would love drafting. But I'm just not into card alterings in that fashion, so yeah. We have to live in this rigid world where there aren't enough vampires and zombies for the cube. One day, I'll just be like, ah, screw it. They're all my own magic cards, I don't give a shit. But until those days, Trinket Mage is great. You've got so many things you can get with it. I think that was the most fun about kind of putting in the cube. Was it's like, oh, we already have Curse Scroll. We already have
Bird of Effigy.
No, we didn't. Oh, we already have Bone Splitter. you definitely
Aether Vial.
Aether Vial, yeah. All cards that are great to get on turn four or later. Nocturnus would still not be last pick if it was undead. I don't care what you're saying.
Nocturnus was sweet.
That being said, we were able to add more stuff. The Trinket Mage kind of blends into the next package, because we got to add cards like Zurn Orb and Ivory Tower that interact right with Trinket Mage, and that would be the, doesn't start with an S, but that's fine.
How are we doing?
The Necropotence package. Yeah. Talk about great stuff for Magic History and things that I've always wanted to be good in Cube. That would be that god-awful artwork.
There we go.
There's
why does it load the worst?
The skull.
Loads the worst art by default.
Because it's a dick. That's why. Gatherers.
Fuck you, Gatherer.
Yeah. Well, we still like a gatherer, it just can be a dick.
Yeah.
That said, Necro, I love Necro, I love Bargain. I didn't play as much competitive Magic during the Black Summer, but I definitely played a lot of Magic. And it was definitely, you saw that card as a kid, and you were like, well, you really got to understand the difference between life, cards, resource
management, and the exchange thereof.
Yeah, why Dark Ritual into Necro is good, why using those cards in that way can get you an advantage. That being said, the first kind of iteration where Necropotence was in Cube, it just didn't do anything.
No.
It was almost too fair. It was almost like how you would have assumed playtesters would have engaged with it.
It was like you would play it, and it would draw you some cards, but then more likely than not, those cards would not win you the game on the spot. And then you'd be in this situation where, like, okay, I've taken a bunch of damage, and I've drawn some cards, so now I'm at, like, 8 life, and I don't get to draw any more cards fairly, so I have to find a way to get rid of this Necropotence in my mostly black deck. So, like, that was not easy to do, and then you get in this situation where it would, like, it's the skipping your draw step and would, like, almost kill you. Because you would just get in the situation where, like,
you'd be virtually dead. It's like how Jace the Mind Sculptor can virtually win the game without people knowing it. Yeah. Necro can virtually lose people the game all the time without them knowing it.
Yeah.
Especially when they get just way too gung-ho, and they're like, oh yeah, draw seven more, I'll figure it out, I've got all these cards.
Right.
And not having access to Drain Life, Corrupt, Consuming Spirit, these are things that can really hurt you. So, kind of going the extra mile, where it's like, sure, you've got Ivory Tower, you've got Zurn Orb, you've got the original kind of components that sat around Necropotence, but also trying to find other life gain elements to do things. And talk about some of the hardest cards to evaluate and put into a cube that ever do anything, and that's life gain. As much as I love, and Vint loves Renewed Faith.
I was about to say Renewed Faith.
There have been times where Renewed Faith has been in cube.
It's not been the worst.
No, it's...
I mean, it's not
been,
really
a... It's been gain 2 life draw a card a lot, and it's been fog a lot of other times.
Yeah.
It's never been draw 6.
No.
Those things being said, it's really hard to find life gaining cards in cube. But for the cards like Necro, you want them to be there. You want to have it experienced. So it kind of goes hand in hand with cards like Clearwater Goblet. And,
right.
Yeah, because, again, like, you can't really evaluate a card like Exalted Angel next to Necropotence, because, like, if you're hitting them with these cards, you're winning a race,
the game
is already over based on this thing, you don't need to, like, oh, I'll hit you with Exalted Angel, I'll draw 4, ha 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 ha. It's not really how it works.
Yeah.
Alright, so, yeah, Necro, that's a package and a plan I really hope that we can cultivate and make better over time, and we could find more cards to go with it. From there, we'll talk about the seismic assault package. Yeah, you can go ahead and mod Kenny there.
I'll figure that out.
That's a timeout. We'll figure that out later. For everyone listening at home. Yeah. Kenny's a good friend of ours. We will mod him for the main channel here as we go forward.
Yeah,
we want to bring up Seismic Assault. Seismic Assault, for those of you that don't remember drafting it in a regular draft format, tis a fine card that you can play in a limited format, usually Corset and such. No, Sam, you can continue asking about terrible white bears. At this point in our lifespan, I will go off topic briefly. I will say that most of the double white bears
are gone.
Have died off.
Eight and a half tails, gone.
They will
gone.
Go that the way of the sucked. Dodo.
Silver Knight is like one of the few that's left.
True.
Sarah Avenger.
I gotta say, Sarah Avenger.
Well, not really a bear, I guess.
Whatever. I think Act worked a really long, really, really hard to get rid of the Sultari Priest, Sultari Monk situation.
I hated those. And I mean, eight and a half just never did anything.
That's not true.
I never activated.
I think the week we cut it, I had a deck where eight and a half tails was doing things.
That was a spite deck.
I 2-1 that draft. I mean, okay. It wasn't clearly a winner.
Clearly on the back of the sheer brutality that is eight and a half tails.
Syndicate of Tides is not currently in cube.
I'm for it. Personally,
it's fine.
I want to try it out. Maybe, I think it would be cool.
I felt like we just kind of overhauled White's creatures.
Yeah.
Actually, if you want to do the people, we'll do them a favor. We'll bring up the, for Sam's benefit and other people's benefit, we'll take a sidetrack from the package plan. We'll talk about the double white bears problem. For many years, double white bears have infested the cube. You could say the cube was just overrun by bears. They all caused double white.
Bear infestation.
They were fine. They weren't really spectacular.
They were
They weren't awful.
They were very mediocre.
Let's not do this. Let's bring up the cube list. Let's go to the changes that have happened in white.
So
let's go to last update. Okay. Again, this hasn't been moved over yet.
Sure.
Let's scroll up to white. So we got rid of Loyal Cathar. We got rid of Mistral Charger. We got rid of Sarah Avenger. We got rid of Lunar Relic Warder. We got rid of Mentor of the Meek. We got rid of the Throbbing Coxair. We got rid of Knight of Meadowgreen. And we've tried to bring in other things. Now cards like Still Moon, they moved over, which is fine. Now we've got Celestial Guildmage, which again kind of straddles the line between green and white, which is fine. Glow Rider kind of goes with the Sphere of Resistance package, which we're kind of working in for kind of Mana Denial to go against the control decks. Frontline Medic, again, so, you know, 3-3 for 3, and we're trying other stuff there. I feel like there were other cheaper white guys around, probably from the other previous update. So there's not so much concentrated on making sure there are still lots of guys across two.
I mean, this is the update after we got rid of the Sultari.
Yeah, this is like the update after the update after the update. So this isn't so much. But if we go back to the white, let's just go straight to white then. And look at the creature side. We have a Quarter Paladin. We have Cloistered Youth. We've got...
I'm not a huge Cloistered Youth fan.
That's fine. You don't need to be. There's Lawkeeper. There's the dog.
Coruscant Fisher.
There's Coruscant Fisher, which is an awkward one.
Relic Warder.
He's gone.
Oh, he's gone?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Come on now. Toilet Load is really a 2-drop in my mind. Only the control decks. Even the control decks just pay 2 mana for that guy.
That card's just sweet.
There's still Silver Knight. There's still Squire that gets equipment. Yeah, there's still plenty. There's still guys.
Most of them do stuff, which is the relevant part.
Yeah. I don't need to convince you that New Gideon is good. He is just fine. I'm not saying he's spectacular. He's just fine. So, now that we've gone down the rabbit hole on double white bears, we'll come back to the Assault package. Now, one of the reasons I've been drawn to Seismic Assault was pretty much its original draft implications. A lot of the red decks... You kind of want to shave down on land, but you know you have to play lands in your deck. And Seismic Assault was a great way to kind of give you that bonus for lands 4 through 7 that you draw, or 5 through 8 that you might draw during a game that you don't necessarily need. It's been great in that regard.
I mean, like, Seismic Assault doesn't see as much play as it should.
Yeah, that's one of the things. It's really weird that the aggro red drafters...
Don't take it.
Don't take it.
Yeah, I think it's just this weird... Everyone because most people's more recent experience with seismic assault is, like, either comboing with Swans or Life from the Loam, they think of it as, like, this degenerate combo card, and that's it. So, like, they don't think of it as just, like, oh, well, nothing in my deck costs more than four, so every land I draw after that, I can just throw at their face.
Right. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say it's Sulfuric Vortex. I'm not going to go that far. But I'm going to say it's a fine makeup point for the fact that you don't have four Sulfuric Vortexes in your queue.
And, like, pitching lands to kill their guys, like, kill their blockers, like, that's sweet.
Yeah, we all get the power of discarding a land to shock things at instant speed. We all,
like, apparently our Red Raptors don't.
We all know that's good. Well, like, you know, the initial shock costs two cards and three mana. I can understand where it looks like a steep cost up front, but in games that are going to go longer, it's going to give reach for those red decks you wouldn't necessarily have. That said, there is the full Swan package in the cube. You can Swan Seismic Assault, Life from the Loam. You can just Life from the Loam Assault. Getting the kind of four-color Swans deck together. I don't remember why it has to be four colors. Is it just three-color Swans? Yeah. Every time I've seen it be really successful, it's usually like four-color Swans.
Because, you know, at that point, just whatever. Man, just whatever. Played some cards.
The Seismic Assault Swans of Gwenargle deck is a really fun one. I think I made it happen a month or two ago.
I've seen it a few times pop up here and there.
I've learned that you
can... Stefan drafts it.
I've learned that I can deal about 18 damage in a turn. That was pretty good.
Stefan's a fan. I've seen him with it a couple times.
Yeah, Stefan, I think, was one of the first people that really made it work. I mean, then you get, like, you know, you get those extra bonus cards, like if you happen to get the Strip Mine, or even the Wasteland. I don't go as far as adding Crucible. I think that card's a little too narrow. I mean, talk about a card that doesn't make friends with anyone. Might as well just put Stasis and Crucible into the cube and then just pound nails into our deck. Because, my God, what terrible, terrible world we would live in. And I'm the guy who loves LD, but I do not want to...
not that much.
I don't want to live in a world where Crucible, Strip Mine, and Stasis exist.
But, I mean, related to that, I think all the portions of the Seismic Assault Swan's monstrosity have some utility and value on their own.
They do things on their own.
Seismic Assault being good in an aggressive red deck. Life from the Loam, typically more of a sideboard card, but, you know, because land destruction is so prevalent in the cube, being able to have a really powerful effect to fight it is good, even if you're not necessarily, like, designing your deck to get value off of it on its own. Just being able to work with what they're doing to you. And then, like, Swans is still a four-power guy flyer for four. I would play it against red.
People constantly surprise me with how good they make Swans. Swans was one of those cards that I was probably gonna cut. I was getting real close to cutting quite a few times, and then, you know, one new week, someone would do something different with it. And it would be as crazy as, like, you know, oh, okay, block your Grave Titan on the incoming, go ahead, draw six. Like, did you find an answer? Okay, well, like, I've set up another, like, board stall.
Yeah.
We can do attack in, you only have, like, seven cards left in your library. Like, I've seen things like that work, which just blew my mind.
Or, like, I had it a couple weeks ago, where it was just, like, I was playing, like, kind of an aggressive white deck, and it was just, like, I just slammed Swans and just, like, bash. And they had, like, some flyers, and it's like, okay, fine, block, you get to draw some cards. You still can't stop my four-power flying attacker just killing you. Like, you can give them all the cards that they want if they can't stop
them. Yeah, it's really weird how Air Elemental can just kind of get the job done sometimes. That's one of those things where the card's been really exciting for me. It's an interesting question in the chat here. For Peasant Cube, how would you rate Cloud Goat Ranger, Sarah Angel, and Geist Honored Monk?
Geist Honored Monk is rare. And yes, that order is correct. Cloud Goat Ranger is the best out of those three.
Yeah, and it doesn't even need to be rare.
Yeah.
Geist Honored Monk was a card we included recently in Cube. It's been a great card. Clones are really good. Slipping and sliding stuff with Venser and, Sarah Angel isn't rare. I don't care what people say. Demonic Tutor isn't rare.
No.
Oh, actually, Demonic Tutor, they weren't even dumb enough to when they printed it in the Liliana versus, not Liliana, Garrick.
Yeah.
It was not rare there either.
Yeah.
I do miss Sarah Angel. I really wish you could put it in Cube. I think if we were to somehow put Sarah Angel in Cube, I'd probably have to put Stasis into Cube so it would have an inkling of a chance of being any good, and then I just want to shoot myself.
Yeah,
so those things would not happen.
That, yeah.
So yeah, that's my feeling on Seismic Assault. You know, again, with those Seismic Assault decks, Sun Titan is also really good.
Yeah.
Sun Titan crops
sometimes
up.
Works well with a lot of things in cube.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's just a good card.
It crops up a lot more than
Go
I...
Go figure.
Yeah, I think. Permanents that cost three or less...
are good.
Surprisingly large amount.
Especially in cube. When all the cards are good.
Yeah.
Getting some of them back. Useful.
So the last package on my package list is quite the package.
Okay.
You should have to take a shot for every time we say package.
Oh, God.
I guess just a drink. Just a
blackout drink.
I didn't plan for this to go this way. It just turned out this way. That is the LD package.
Once you start talking about packages.
I know, right? You want to bring up a land destruction spell? How about Stone Rain? Okay. Let's all take a gander
at Stone Rain. I wonder what horrible Kamigawa picture? Oh, God. Oh,
ninth edition. I think it goes for whatever the last printing was.
No,
that's the default.
It was in Kamigawa.
That's not the last printing.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, the nice thing about it, if you play the Alpha one, is it doesn't care about Shroud, you can hit any land.
Anyone.
It says right on it, any land.
Anyone.
And it destroys it, so that's good. Yep, there we go. Those things being said, land destruction, is it a package, really?
I mean...
Heck kind of fought for this one. I let him have it because we got to talk about land destruction.
Right. Your favorite topic.
Also, new Ogre Arsonist artwork. Have you seen this? You know what I'm talking about? Have you
no.
seen this?
What is that?
So the IDW, the comic book series. The newest comic book. So in every comic
yeah,
book.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Yeah, you get a magic promo card.
The promo is Ogre Arsonist?
Ogre Arsonist. Some badass artwork.
Ha. Huh. I would not have picked that as a thing that was going
to
happen.
I know. It's like someone was listening to me.
Like, you know.
It's like I talk to a lot of R&D members, play a lot of magic with them, and then this is the strange gift we got.
thanks, I guess.
talk about great stories for another day. Watching Dave Guskin of Magic Online and Matt Tabak of Rules for Magic the Gathering playing cube with my cube and not knowing how the Abyss works.
Well done, guys.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Love them. Love them. Great guys.
they gotta nail that down, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Kenny has linked you in where the pick would be. We'll hope this is not a package pick, but moreover something partially...
Oh, that is cool looking.
Yeah, would you like to bring it up for the people at home? I mean, not that they wouldn't mind continuing to look at...
So that's what the new Ogre Arsonist looks like.
Yeah.
He actually looks like a... Yeah, he's definitely kind of a badass.
Yeah, not I mean, bad. The old artwork was surprisingly okay. And, you know, it was already black-bordered, so...
It wasn't, like, that big of a deal.
No, I mean, if it had been Goblin Settler, I think everyone would have been a lot happier.
Yeah.
Because there's that little ugly white border card. Like, every time you, like, flip through a pack of cube cards and you get to a white border card, you're always like, oh, well, I'm done here. I found what I'm taking. But then it's a Goblin Settler and you're like, maybe not.
Yeah.
So that said, that's that. So, we talked about it in the first episode. We'll touch on it again. Land Destruction has been in my cube since kind of day one. It was kind of a filler, at first, to kind of blend two colors that I felt were kind of short as we were trying to make a larger cube. And as time has progressed, it has become my baby. And against certain players who like to play four or five color good stuff, having a Stone Rain in your deck can have great effect on the game. If you're playing an aggro zoo deck, having a Stone Rain in your deck can make a lot of good. They've always found new ways to make me happy and keep them there.
I think it's interesting the way you describe Land Destruction as your baby, where I would describe it like your maddening obsession that will like drive you to ruin.
What is the Stream of Acid was the one we found recently?
Yeah, like that was...
That's like a card that I probably had seen.
I'm going to pull that one up. You all know it as Befell. I got a frenzied text message one night because we found a new 4-mana land destruction spell.
I mean, it's Befoul. Let's be real.
He's like, oh my god, we could put this in cube. Holy shit, this is going to be fucking rad. And I'm like, Befoul is already terrible.
It's borderline on its way out. I mean, now that we've kind of adjusted things, it's probably coming out.
Yeah.
So I got really excited about Stream and then never ended up putting in the cube.
Right, because I was like, why would we put a second Befoul in when the first one is already almost coming out?
Because we want to.
No, you want to.
Alternatively, Army Ants did make the cut.
Army Ants is a lot better.
Yeah, Army Ants was quite the dick-kicking last week.
What do you think about Dust Bowl?
It's been a fine card in the past.
I know it used to be in.
Yeah, the thing about Dust Bowl is it's so slow.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
So slow.
3 mana every time?
Only hits the non-basics.
Yeah.
Like the kind of aggressive red-black LD decks, as they're most commonly, but not exclusively, they don't really want to play that many lands that produce colorless.
No. You need all the colored mana.
So then it gets into this awkward, like, oh, well, now I'm the control deck, and I'm trying to choke the bad mid-range or bad control decks off of six or more mana. Like, this Dust Bowl is going to get it done. I just never got there. I mean, even when we expanded the land section most recently, I don't even think it made the maybes list.
No.
It wasn't even, like, up for debate.
No. It's something I think I've thought about, because, I mean, it's one of the things that has been in before.
Yeah.
And has, like, since kind of, like, lost its spot. But, I mean, you are right. It's very slow.
So slow. So slow.
And that's not really what you want out of your land destruction. It's slow.
So that was kind of the off the top of our head list of packages we've kind of supported or tried to help flourish in the past. And again, with Cube, it's important that you don't have cards that are too one-dimensional, that are too, you know, first or 15th, I think is an excellent way to kind of put it, the way Eck put it. Yeah, that's what you're trying to avoid. You don't want those cards where, like, this only works in this very narrow set of circumstances. And there are cards that are definitely fringe for that in the Cube. Right. Ivory Tower and Tefridor, our eyes, we're looking at you, buddies.
Zurin Orb.
You leave Zurin Orb alone.
Whoa, I didn't realize this is a point of contention.
No, I played it in that Oath of Druids deck last week, and it was actually really good.
I remember that.
I almost win a game off of you because of my Zurin Orb?
No.
Was that you or was that somebody else?
I mean, that was certainly somebody else, because you did not come close to beating me.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Why am I so sleepy?
I don't know.
Well, that said, what else is on our list today? Oh, you had brought up there was a question about new player problems.
I got a question on Twitter from Chewter,
who is also
at Chewter,
who is also in the chat, I believe, right now.
Ah, very likely. Hello, Chew. And he had asked me, how do we make Cube new player friendly, or what do we do about bringing in more inexperienced players and making their experience with Cube, fun and interesting and not scare them all off with all the complications and the dynamics of Cube from the get-go.
As a side note, poor Philadelphia Flyers. The Leafs took them down again, 4-2 tonight. Really relevant.
Yeah.
So, things like this actually go a long way. Just kind of talking to new players about Magic, and, you know, let's say you didn't play Magic 15 years ago, let's say you played 6 months ago, and you don't even know what a Necropotence is, kind of bring them up to speed about card interactions that may be exciting to them, might be interesting to them. I mean, kind of the same hook that keeps us very excited about playing the game and finding new card interactions is almost like an exponential scale for new players. And once you kind of get over that initial hurdle where it feels like, oh, I'm going to be so lost, I don't even want to do this, which is what keeps a lot of people away at first, you just get to have fun as you slowly explore it. And once people are willing to just kind of get in there and get their hands dirty, very few people are going to leave being like, that was a miserable experience. Unless you happen to be the guy who loses to Red Black Elite.
He was not a happy.
That being said, you know, even when I come up to a new Cube that I've never played with before, and I'll sit down with people to draft and have that experience for the first time, I'll usually kind of go with safer strategies, things I'm very familiar with, because I'd like to think that the components will be there. Like, there's always draft mono red. You could always find the
blue-white control deck.
Most likely those things are always there that you might know about from core set drafting, although as the M sets become more specific and less kind of general, we might move away from those kind of strategies, but, you know, just kind of going through the motions. And, you know, sure, a guy that's been playing Magic for 6 months may walk up to a Cube draft, not know how Oath of Druids works, how Oath of Ghouls works, how, you know, Necropotence works, how Moat works, how Upheaval works, how Suspend works. But, you know, you're going to play those games, and as long as you don't get discouraged by losing, get excited by seeing something or doing something for yourself or playing with new and exciting cards you never played with before, that's usually enough to bring them back for the next week and the next experience.
So, like, a great example of that is my housemate, Moses. Yes,
Moses started playing Magic, like, 4 months ago.
We literally taught him with random crap we'd lying around the house, and his first experience outside of, like, here are the rules, let's play a test game with these, like, decks made out of, like, random draft commons in the house was Cube. Like, that's all he's really done. He has, like, a...
Thrown into the deep end.
We got him a Magic Online account. He has, like, a little, you know, he got, like, the cards that you start with, like, a little standard deck. And, you know, right from that to cube drafting, you know. So, he is new could really possibly be. And he has every, you know, I'm not going to say he is winning all of his matches. And I'm not going to say he knows all the cards back and forth yet, but... You know, he finds it fun, he finds it interesting, and every week he gets better.
Your interest level also helps a lot. I mean, there have been times during these months where Moses has been much more interested and has kind of done a little more of his own research outside of, like, the Cube League weeks, and that can help. And again, a lot of it, you know, what's your interest level? What do you want to do?
Right.
I think that anyone that's drafted Gatecrash could come Cube draft with us and enjoy it. They're not necessarily going to get every single nuance, understand every single card interaction, know which kind of rabbit holes you can go down. And I think that's more of the job of the people building the cube, facilitating the cube, to make those resources available and make them interesting enough that people would want to care and learn about it, not just be like, oh, I lost to Oath of Druids, screw that, I'm never going back again.
Yeah, and I think that's just the function, though, of any, especially limited format, you know. As you approach it initially... You know, especially if you know nothing going into it, you take the safe routes of approach that you know are tried and true for Magic. And then as you go forward, learning about the nuances of the format, you develop, you know, decks that have, you know, synergies between certain cards or, you know, you notice the speed of the format, for instance. You know, try and evaluate cards, whether or not they're good or bad based on, you know, your experiences doing that, that you wouldn't necessarily have in the first week going in blind, you know. You're gonna know a format a lot better the fifth time you draft it than the first time.
True. I mean,
and you could do more interesting or complicated, complex things once you get to that point.
I just generally being excited about it and being engaging about it goes a really long way. Thankfully at the place that we hold Cube League at every week, there's a standard event that takes place at the same time, and literally people go between rooms and be really excited. I mean, people that have never cubed with us before are looking over the shoulders of their friends who have drafted, they've built decks, they're really engaged by, oh, what did you do? What did you draft? Like, what can you do? How can you do that? What are you going to be playing against? It's a little bit of, like, learning through osmosis, and it's a little bit of, like, just kind of wakening up to card interactions and things that are exciting about Magic that you may not have happened with. And, again, that kind of leads into my own personal cube and cube philosophy, where it's like, it's things that our Magic history and that I've had fun doing in the past and want to find a way to recreate a limited format and bring to other people. Because I know that's it's a huge hurdle where it's like, Necropotence?
I don't know what this card is.
Psychotog? Tinker?
Opposition?
Tangle Wire?
Yeah.
These things are weird to me and probably aren't fun and they're probably just miserable.
Yeah, like, you know, it's just going to be the function that, especially when you're new, you can always... One of the easiest ways to tell how long someone has been playing Magic is the rate at which they have to read all the cards in booster drafts when they're cube drafting.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, if you've been playing for a long time, you know, you remember, even if you don't know, like, what's in the cube, you're like, oh, okay, that's Opposition. Oh, okay, that's Oath of Ghouls. Oh, okay, that's this, whatever. But, like, you know, especially if you've only been playing 3-4 years, there's so many cards in cube that you've never seen before, potentially, because especially the ones that are not necessarily, like, multi-format all-stars, that you end up with, you know, people like, what? And then, like, okay, and then I do, okay, and then I do, and then I flip, and then I...
Oftentimes it's a function of hold wording. Above,
hold above table at least 1 foot? Okay.
All right. Yeah, I think we've sufficiently tackled that one. You know, and cube isn't necessarily for everyone. Some people just kind of get overwhelmed by it, and it's hard to get them to come back. And again, to me, it's just like, as long as they're willing to play Magic, and they enjoy playing Magic and want to keep doing that, I think eventually you will gravitate towards cube. I can't think of anyone that I know that has played Magic for more than a year that isn't interested in cube drafting. Like, maybe they're not super into doing it all the time, maybe they're not actively pursuing it or podcasting about it.
I think a lot of people who are not really into cube drafting are like tend to be on the more serious side and be like, well, I would cube draft, but I have to test for this format.
Right. I can't PTQ with cube, so why would I ever do that?
Yeah, there's no GPT cube. Like,
and to those people I would say, you don't really realize what you're missing.
Yeah.
You don't I think one of my favorite analogies has been, you know, playing with pod decks in Modern, where you kind of come to that realization where it's like, oh, this is kind of a cube deck.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of, like, sweet value guys that have...
And it's, like, Enders a million single decks.
Yeah. It can be done. So, no one that plays a lot of Magic isn't going to tell you that, you know, if you cubed a lot, you just become a better Magic player. And that's one of the things you could tell to those guys that are, you know, I'm grinding FNMs, I'm making packs and making bills with my singles, and that's what I want to do.
I'm grinding Moto.
Yeah.
A-Man's, like, quote-unquote going infinite.
Sure. But you're still going to become a better Magic player and probably have a different kind of fun playing Cube. It's fun as it is to play Jund for the 800th time.
It's just like, you're exercising a different part of the skill set.
I'm talking about so much critical thinking and problem solving and evaluating, and
yeah,
it's the Cadillac, it's the be all end all, it's the gold standard, it's what I would want to be doing. If anyone would say, hey, do you want to play Magic, I would take Cube over Vintage, and I would take Vintage over most things.
Yeah.
So
ever since they restricted Transfer, I guess that
I still played plenty of Vintage. I became like an Oath fanatic.
Yeah. Really?
Oh yeah. I used to play Oath all the time. Right before they took down was it deck check?
Deck check, yeah.
Like, one of the last deck lists are up there. I was like, I had an Oath list from top four of a Vintage event.
Oh,
they
really
butchered my name. It was still a good Oath list.
Nice.
I think that was the event where...
I didn't realize you were such an Oath aficionado.
Oh, I love Oath. Huh. That was the same event where Sperling turn one suicided himself because he was afraid of my opener or something. I think he wrote a tournament report about it.
That's exciting.
Like and then we played again in top four, and he turn one Xanted Swarm game two, and I turn one Dry Oath.
That's kind of sick.
I already had a Moldus six, and I didn't think I had Force. I had like one Spell Pierce or something.
Nice.
So, like, I had answers, but he was like, Xanted Swarm go, and I was like,
Oath of Druid.
Oath go?
Shreds.
Iona go again?
Yeah. Shall I just block with you, Xanted Swarm?
Actually, this is, you know, since we've kind of hit all of our topics, we can kind of leave the viewers, those of us who are still with us, kind of a little more open to the floor, and, I do like this question. Is Cube the competitive player's fun? Like, EDH is the casual player. Is for casual players. I don't think it's as cut and dry as that. I would definitely say that there are people that enjoy EDH that just don't enjoy Cube because there is that line where it's too competitive for them.
It's a little too cutthroat.
There aren't as many sorceries that cost six or more mana. There aren't as many creatures with double-digit power and toughness.
People like, stop you from doing things. Rather than everyone just do their own thing.
Right. I mean, I am not the biggest advocate of EDH. I think it is a fun alternative to playing competitive Magic 24/7, but it has not been my choice. Sitting in a large multiplayer game can be interesting if everyone is kind of on it and doing stuff.
But that's never the case.
Yeah, Commander gets really just kind of like so caught up muddled and convoluted with people not doing things. So, in a way, yeah. I mean, I could kind of agree with the fact that for competitive players who are jamming the 8-4s or jamming the dailies, Cube can kind of be an outlet for them to try to be competitive in a fun and engaging way where oftentimes you aren't necessarily playing for big stakes or, you know, grinding the 100th match of your blue-white flash deck or whatever.
I think one of the ways Cube and EDH, though, are similar is that a lot of the value or the enjoyment factor of those formats are based out of the social aspect. Whereas, like, EDH, because you're playing a multiplayer game, presumably with friends, you know, it's the get-together, you have, grab a couple beers, sit at the kitchen table, and bust out, like, a big-ass EDH game. Whereas, like, with Cube, it's, you know, okay, we're at this card shop or whatever, we all know each other, and rather than play multiplayer Magic, we draft and play against each other. So it's that competitive, but it's also like the you're hanging out with people you know and friends and shooting the shit and talking about stuff while you are also playing, you know, playing Magic.
It's a very good point. I think it kind of blends into so many different interactions and unique circumstances that come up in Cube won't come up in playing Gatecrash Limited for the 30th or 40th time.
No.
Maybe Gatecrash is a horse that's not worth beating. But, you know, playing whatever the current draft format is again versus playing Cube again can be very different and light and refreshing. And it's not so much about, you know, the competitive aspect. It is the interactions, the things you get to do in draft. So that could be really great. But I think we've covered our topics. We are coming in surprisingly light today. I mean, with no real kind of, like, boundaries for ourselves. Last week, we almost hit 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And here we're...
at 75.
We're pushing up on 75. Yes, MotoCube does add a lot of legitimacy to the Cube format. Although I really think that just kind of in the last 3 or 4 years, as more people and players that the community kind of respects or looks to for information are advocating it and talking about it and really bring it to the forefront, more people are just engaged by it. And to me, you know, as much as I like to say that something like EDH is probably the Magic community's version of Counter-Strike, where it was really cultivated by the community, made by the community, for the community, and adopted to become mainstream, Cube is very, very similar. And something I didn't really think was even going to happen, even as I saw the kind of the rise of EDH, I thought Cube was going to be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's too hard to build. There could never be a consensus on a list for what the Cube is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. It just has to be a strong open dialogue between the community on what having fun with all of the Magic cards can be. And again, that's what I've always kind of wanted. So that would be great.
Yeah. Someone just asked in chat when we are going to stream a Cube Draft. Likely that will be when the MotoCube comes back.
I would say better than likely.
I mean, when the MotoCube comes back, we'll be doing a lot of that. It's the logistics of trying to stream a live draft.
Well, the other thing is
kind of gnarly.
The limited resources clan on MTGO has a very strong community of guys who run Cube Drafts. They've recently ran them through Tapped Out. They actually have new software to run through. And then the mod will trade you stuff. And I've actually participated in a few of those now. And those have run really well. And actually, they take place on Mondays quite often. Now, Monday isn't exactly going to be our standard casting time. But streaming a live draft would be tough.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see a set of circumstances in which, you know, during times where the MTGO Cube is not up and live, we could bring you an LR Cube event. The LR Cube is a little kind of shallow on resources, but that's just because it's kind of like their own.
It's what they got.
Yeah, it is what they have. But it's,
I mean, that's
better than nothing. I mean, a Cube Draft is a Cube Draft.
Yeah.
And if we could bring it to you interactively, that would be fun. So.
And also, I mean, just playing with different cubes and talking about different lists. There's been a couple people who have mentioned in chat, you know, talk about different kind of thematic cubes or looking at different lists and talking about, you know, or like make a starter cube list. Someone was suggesting like brew a 360 cube on the fly. Things like that. Like,
yeah, long ago, I wrote an article, actually, about kind of what I would consider to be a skeleton cube, and I should go back, dig that up, and kind of update it for today, because I know that it was an outline that I was really proud of a long time ago, and it needs updating, but kind of that concept, if I was to kind of shave down my cube to 360 cards, what would it look like? Why would it look like that? And then kind of offer that up is, you know, if you were going to start tomorrow, and I'm not going to be as facetious as to say that, you know, you're going to want to build my cube tomorrow, but if you were going to build a cube, and this would be the shell for it, and then you could expand upon it, this is what I would be doing, similar to when, you know, I started this process years ago, having that information was really key, and I made a pretty good job of documenting it in that time. I just have to go back and find it, because a skeleton cube would be great. That would,
yeah,
that would be an interesting thing to tackle on a podcast or a stream like this. But,
I mean, that's the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem in general with Cube is not that people don't want to do it or are, like, turned off by the act of Cube drafting. It's getting it together.
Like, yeah, but there's so many more resources nowadays than when we were, you know, the Wild West of cubing. And, you know, there's all these, you could find threads on Salation and, you know, friends of a friend, even on Reddit about, you know, card printers, quality,
yeah,
how to do it, layouts.
Proxying has gotten so much better in the last 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like being able to at home make, I mean, what's the guy's name? We drafted with his cube the like a couple weeks ago? Like the
Kenan?
Yeah, Kenan. The mm-hmm. fake foil power.
Yeah, well, Kenny's done a lot of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, I haven't.
No. He also has a split card cube as well, which you have to print.
So yeah.
Those can look really cool. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's such a blend of personal taste and kind of knowing where to find your resources and utilize them and what ones you do and don't want to. It often feels like there can be resources that monopolize people's feelings. And, you know, someone like Evan Irwin, who I like a lot, you know, has cubedrafting.com, and it just isn't a high priority for him, and things can kind of, like, just kind of get bogged down for him. And I know people will look to him and be like, hey, you know, where's your update? Where's your feeling on the newest set? I was like, they kind of gravitate towards these resources as lists that they look to. Right. I know on Salvation, it's very similar. There are a lot of very prominent threads on what people like. And to me, like, those are great resources to have as to options. And I look at my own as that kind of same thing, where it's like I take a different kind of take on things, and I really want to encompass and incorporate Magic's history and have all those things there for people. So, you know, making Oath of Druids work, but not be just underwhelming, overpowered.
Right.
Finding a good middle ground.
Striking the balance.
Yeah, you know, not always oathing into a Huntmaster spells.
That one was subpar.
Better or worse than Lotus Cobra?
Oh, way worse.
Way worse.
Because I got the freebie Oath back.
Oh, you got to play against that. So you were the guy who was...
He played Oath of Druids, and I had a guy out of player.
Right.
I was like,
as you
resigned were. My fate. I was like, okay, whatever, you're going to get some giant thing. And he flips Huntmaster of the Fells, and I was like, okay, that's fine. You have a wolf and a 2/2.
Did he immediately pass a turn and then like flip his guy and kill your other guy?
No, he played a spell. Not flipping his guy. And then I got to Oath back, like, some whatever giant thing was in my deck. So, that was fun.
Oaths in general is so sweet, because no one thinks they're symmetrical.
Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely, already with Oath of Ghouls, I've definitely had a set of circumstances where it's like, oh, shit, my opponent gets to activate Oath. Go. Draw.
Yeah.
Land. I'm like,
good, good.
I'd love to block.
Yeah.
That has been good.
The Cube list is available on the info on the Twitch channel, as well as on...
Yeah, we can assume at the 80-minute mark here that everyone who's currently in the chat is new people that have stopped by for the first minute. Everyone that was here when we started up has long since found this far too boring, and they're gone. So we'll audibly spam the info one more time. That link, that's probably mine. Could be a dick pic. Who knows?
Yeah.
If you go to the info part of the Twitch channel, you can find the link to the Blogspot page, which is going to host all of this information. You're going to find a link to the Cube list just by itself. You're going to find a link to the iTunes channel to subscribe and download our episodes as we post just the podcast portion and not the us picking our nose portion. What else can we find there, Eck?
The achievements list, the guidelines for running a Cube League, the list of the Cube... Contact info for both of us, thanks to our YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, YouTube channel. We got more things to come.
The blog, which is very skeletal at this point.
True, these things are all in their infancy.
So, you just know, general, our Twitter handles.
5 days ago, we were running a test run, and...
it's a cable list in the shape of a dick pic. It's just formatted really kind of
strange. It's been a while since I've been advocating dick pics this much.
Well, you know, now that we're back on camera.
Yeah, exactly. That might do us for tonight. Again, this is kind of a special test for the East Coast audience. I gotta tell you, they did not show out in force tonight, so it's gonna be a lot easier to go back to the would-be standard time slot on Wednesday, although that slot will probably be a little bit earlier and still just as easy to fill. So look for us around 9.
This is the most innuendo-laden podcast,
I know, I try
possibly
sometimes.
Ever.
Not even close.
Okay.
Look for us Wednesdays 9:30 or 10 p.m. Pacific, depending on how much time it takes for us to run the league.
And we'll both be posting on Twitter about.
Yeah, we'll be active about it. We want to get the snowball kind of going on this situation because we're excited to be more regular about it. Again, for those who didn't tune in last week, a lot of arguments, conversations, good talks have come out of just Cube League and trading info about it, and now we hope to bring a much more concise version. So if there's any other parting words or shots or anything you'd like to give before we go tonight, again, with this special Monday edition, we're going to get out of here even before midnight Eastern. That's weird.
I know.
We probably get a draft together.
Probably. We should probably
I'd like to draft, yeah. We have cards.
We could at least, we could just Winston Riv.
Yeah. Oh, Braids and Stupor? Yeah, know which one will table.
Right? Poor Braids.
It's like an entire topic. Poor Braids.
That'll be a show down the line.
Did I tell you Vin actually had a nightmare about Braids once?
Really?
Don't tell me that. He might have been on something. I'm not going to lie.
That doesn't really surprise me at all.
He was pretty, yeah. Well, there you have it. Oof, got here late. Yeah, definitely, you know, again, you can download just the audio if you want to read this. If you want to listen to this on your bullet train trip between Tokyo and wherever you're heading.
The audio will be up later.
The audio will be up later. You can find, Eck is nice enough to put this on his Twitch channel, obviously, because we're here. But you'll also be able to find it on YouTube if you'd like to add more insulting comments there. Crack a cube pack. We cracked a cube pack at the beginning of the show. People are showing up now.
Yeah, get the replay on.
Yeah, once this thing goes to Finish Town, you'll be able to go back. We have a very high tech pick a pack situation. But I guess
MS Paint, baby.
Ten
whole minutes.
The problem is that I think that if I try to pick 15 cards right here, right now, a lot of them are going to be from the pack we did earlier. Mm-hmm. Because that was what I was holding. Yeah. But we'll try, I guess. Let's just whip up. The best thing is that Eck will now have to pull up images as fast as possible, as I have now very audibly...
As you're actively
as I have very audibly shuffled.
Yeah.
Do you want to try to put it together all fancy-like for people?
I'm not going to attempt.
The behind-the-scenes process?
The Bob Ross, Pretty Little Trees painting.
Yeah, that worked out pretty well. It only has a handful of the cards now that I've shuffled. So let's start with that one. I shouldn't say that one. I should say exactly what they are.
You can just show them on stream.
Well, I can.
Yeah, there you go.
That looks familiar. Oh, yeah, nice and glossy. Nice and we've got it. We have a skull clamp. That's going to be hard to beat out of the gate. Then we've got a pack rat, which is I look like an idiot as I move these things towards camera.
Yeah.
Then we've got a strategic planning. I'm going to hold it just there long enough for you to bring it up.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Falcon Wrath Aristocrat. Is there minimum...
Flaking Wrath.
Dandruff Control.
Flaking Wrath. I cannot type tonight. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat.
It's weird because you're using both hands. Mind Slaver.
Horrible art and all.
Croson Grip, which we've determined is not a first pick. I think we've all...
But is a good card nonetheless.
Vampire Nightcock.
Campire Nighthawk. How about?
Yep. Not a champion of karate.
No.
Necromancy. Or Necro... Yes, Necromancy. M is in Mancy.
Yeah.
Then we've got... who is this? Oh, Mangara.
Is that Mangara?
Of the Corridor. Or Mangara.
Corondor.
Corondor.
Yes.
Mimic Vat. This is all screen glare. We don't have any lighting in the front. This is so annoying.
Well, I mean,
Rashadenport.
I'll work on converting my bedroom into a proper studio.
Don't lie. We all know what you do here when I'm not here.
I know.
Orym's Thunder. We'll start with it. Wait, where'd it go? There it is. Orthon Vipir. As Eck has already put in screen. Well, back and to the front.
Orym's Thunder.
There's a reason we do this ahead of time in the show, so now we don't look like idiots for 5 minutes as we slowly hold cards up.
Yeah.
Vesuva, which is all glare business. And last but not least, Solemn, who was from the original pack. Actually, if it's a little higher, that actually helps a lot, too.
Yeah.
So there you have 15 cards. One more time, Solemn, Solacrum, Vesuva, Orym's Thunder, Orthon Viper, Rashadenport, Mimic Bat, Mangara of Corondor, Necromancy, Vampire Nighthawk, Croson Grip, Mind Slayer, Falcon Wrath, Aristocrat, Strategic Planning, Pack Rat, and Skull Clank.
So, that pack is way less dynamic and interesting than the one we did at the top of the show. Skull Clank, but it's not particularly close.
Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of agree with you here. You know, I could see an argument for taking Pack Rat, because that's like a plan unto itself.
Pack Rat's very good, and it works in a lot of decks.
Kind of a one-card combo.
I mean, like, it slots itself well into Reanimator.
Lots of slotting. Strategic planning isn't terrible because it's the only blue card in the pack.
It is the only blue card.
And it facilitates a control deck, it facilitates a reanimator deck, it facilitates things that we like to do playing Magic. All those things said, Skull Clamp.
Skull motherfucking Clamp.
Also that. We could try, so for circumstances like this...
Like, especially, I'm also a big proponent of taking artifacts early...
Just because color, of, like, not committing. Yada, we all get it. Let's say that Skull Clamp wasn't in the pack. Let's just replace it with the top card.
What is the top card? Oh, it's a Diabolic Edict.
Servitude.
Servitude?
No, Diabolic Edict Servitude.
Diabolic Edictitude.
So, in that particular pack of 15 cards, we would take a Skull Clamp, pretty clearly.
Yes. So now it's a Diabolic Servitude, so this pack gets more interesting.
Yeah, so...
The power level drops a lot.
What can I say? They can't all be home runs.
I know. At this point... Strategic planning is actually much closer to being a pick, because while it's not the best card, you're always going to play it in a blue deck, and now you can really reasonably hack blue really hard.
Kind of.
I mean, as hard as you possibly...
You can't hack it any harder than if you were to hack it.
But I'm saying, like, there's... Like, if you just, like, choke out blue, no pun intended.
Yeah. Which usually happens.
You can just... You can hopefully get a lot of stuff on the next pack from the other direction.
That said, you know, you can take Mimic Vat first a lot of times. I mean, I've joked in the past that, you know, eventually Cube will just be nothing but Enters the Battlefield guys. Yeah. So they'll all do something
for the Mimic Vat. They'll all be sweet.
So yeah, in this set of 15 cards, once we lose the Skull Clamp, I like Pack Rat and Strategic Planning a lot more. Pack Rat...
I like Pack Rat, too,
actually. It opens you up a lot. You know, again, it's a Reanimator Enabler. It's an aggro black card. It can just be a win condition for some decks. You know, the blue-black control decks, you just need that guy, and then he makes it.
It's win. Also amazingly good with Recurring Nightmare.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like, that's just gross.
Sure. But, well, they're like, oh, Recurring Nightmare's good? Oh, get out of town! There you have it. You know, I think an argument could be made for Rashadan Port, or maybe Solemn, if you want to play, like, five-color big stuff, or maybe, like, Mangara, if you're kind of, like, strangely suicidal, or you're...
You want to go crazy?
Yeah, I mean, Mangara, you get to go super off the deep end with...
You're just, like, fingers crossed for Caracas.
Right, but like there's also, you know, Parallax Wave, there's, you know, there's stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff with Mangara. Anyway, that's how we feel. I don't even run Preordain, it's not even good enough.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. We did. We opened the show with a very nice kind of crack a pack scenario. It had some backstory to it,
and we ended with a shitty one.
We
ended up Skull Clamp.
Next time we'll prepare some more. But there you have it. This also brings us to the 90 minute mark, which I feel is more appropriate for a podcast. For my podcasting experience, I always thought 60 minutes was what people wanted. Doing Monday Night Magic 2.5 hours was do not have the Delver package, but these are also. Subjects for another day that we will discuss. So yeah, there you go. There you have it. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be back Wednesday evening. Bring
between 9 and 10 West Coast time.
West Coast.
Yes.
As I support.
That's East, where we
an
are.
East Coast product.
And I know.
You're a Niner tool.
Whatever. You don't even like football.
It's not that I don't like it.
You just don't get it.
I get it. I think I get football.
I don't think you do.
We'll discuss this later.
All right.
All right. Well, there we have it. It's hard to do the sign-off here with the whole Twitch thing, but presto goodbye-o! And for those of you listening at home, I have no idea when this will shut off. It's the podcast is a little bit separate, but thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you later.